Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. Reach for Your Notebook by Gwen Blumberg, read by me, Ruth Ayers. Anyone who knows me knows I am a notebook girl. In school, I have one with me at all times, and for the cover-to-cover life of that notebook, I'm a notebook monogamist, writing only in that one. Over the years, I've had smaller notebooks, larger notebooks, some with book bindings, some with spirals, some with lines, some with grids, and some with blank pages in white, cream, and brown craft. No matter the exterior or the interior, each notebook is full of lists, reminders, quotes, meeting notes, ideas, sketches, doodles, and book titles. When I really want something to stand out, I affix a colorful sticky note to the page and add my note to that paper-like frame. Fancy. When each notebook is full, I place it and all its banged up, traveled back and forth from home to school, worn glory on my shelf. I line it up next to the one that came before it so that when I need to remember something, I can flip back through the chronological pages of the notebooks on a quest, not unlike a kind of archaeological dig. Today, I wrote on the last page of a trusty replica of a library card at SeaFind. She was my second notebook of this year, and on deck is a stunning Pantone Beauty I purchased way back in October 2019 at one of my favorite places on the face of the earth, The Strand, in New York City, when I was there for a coaching conference with two of my close colleagues. 4 days, the three of us crowded into a small hotel room at night and shared nonstop conversations about what we were learning and the hopes for our schools over late dinners and on the long train ride home from the city. So this new one, this notebook purchased pre-pandemic, at a time when I was in a crowded city that was so alive, feels extra special. Just looking at the pages and the color swatches sprinkled throughout fills me with joy. However, as odd as this may sound, I'm always a little sentimental on new notebook days. It's strange to set aside something that's been a constant companion for so many weeks and months, and this one, well, it's been a really hard and oftentimes very lonely year at school. So there's a lot of tangled heartache in this little spiral. Nevertheless, our days are becoming a little brighter, and even the hint of a closer normal school year on the horizon fills us with collective hope again. This new notebook's destiny will be to capture moments of where we are, how far we've come, and how we will start again. As I crack the cover and my pencil is poised over the first pristine page, I'm proclaiming that good things and better days are going to happen in the active lifetime of this new notebook. I invite you to join me in this promise by reaching for your notebook in whatever form it might be, and to pick up your pen. Gwen Blumberg is a literacy leader for a kindergarten through eighth grade district in Greater Boston. Gwen shares her passion for children's literature by writing for the collaborative Teachers, Books, Readers blog. You can also find her sharing about all things literacy on Twitter and Instagram. Her handle is at Gwen Blumberg. This issue, we share end of year reflections. There's something here for everyone. Bitsy Parks shares how she circles back to the beginning of the year experiences at the end of the year for her first graders to see their growth. Naval Karuni-Cassiano shares a reflection to use with educators that helps them consider the things that they're going to stop, start, and keep with a lens towards equity. Melanie Quinn shares an idea for allowing her students to pass the so-called torch to her next year's students. And Leanne Eck helps you customize the perfect end-of-year reflection for your students. Leanne joins the podcast, and we talk a little bit more about this idea. Hi, Leanne. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Hi, thank you for having me, Ruth.
You have a new article on the site called From Seed to Blossom, and it's about end-of-the-year reflections. You open the article with the truth that at the end of the school year, we are so busy that it is easy to forget to step back and recognize the growth of students. This is so true, and I think it's especially true this school year after teaching through COVID. So I found it incredibly fascinating that you go on to explain your yearly practice of creating an end-of-the-year reflection just for the kids, just for that year. Will you tell us why it's important to you that you customize a just-right reflection for your current students?
Sure. You know, the end of the year can be so hectic, but the end of the year reflection is something that I've done for maybe, 10 to 12 years. I started doing it after I read The Book Whisperer by Donalyn Miller. And that book changed so much of my teaching. But she had a year-end reflection in that book, and I knew that that was something that I wanted to do. Very rarely do I use the same survey, and that's simply because I don't have the same kids sitting in my classroom from year to year. Now, each class is different. They each come with their own personalities. They have a different set of needs, and I hope that my teaching responds to those needs every year. I mean, I want my response to their needs to be different. I'm not one of those teachers who does the same thing year after year. And so I want the reflection to be based on what we have done and what we have learned together this year. And because of that change in the yearly instruction and the change in the kids, I typically customize it every year. And I just think it's important to think about what kind of feedback I want from that particular year. There may be something that I knew that I tried, and I want to know about that. And so I try to make sure that it's based on each year's students and each year's instruction.
Yeah, I know exactly that survey that you're talking about in Donalyn's book. And, you know, I bet she would be so just tickled to know that you didn't just lift it from her book and you're using it year after year after year, just as is. Because what you're saying, Leanne, it just makes so much sense, right? Like you have a different group of kids in front of you, and there's some things that they can tell you or that you can learn from them that maybe you didn't learn from the group before. It just shows how you're constantly growing as an educator.
Oh, absolutely. I think if I looked back probably at my first reflection, I would probably laugh at some of the questions that I asked and wonder why in the world did I even ask those questions? Because they really have changed quite, which teaching has changed. And so therefore, I think my questions reflecting on that teaching and their learning has to change too.
Yeah, I love that. I just love that idea, and that how the questions we ask change as the things we're interested in and as our learning changes. So it would make sense that these end of the year reflections would change.
Mm-hmm.
So the structure of the article, it's just so helpful, I think, in helping other people create this reflection. Because I can imagine there's people that are like, okay, I am so busy. There's no way that I can spend time just creating a reflection right now. near the end of the year. But what you do is you guide us through thinking through some main topics for the survey. And then in the article, you're offering these questions. Let's talk about some of those different ideas. One of the topics that you talk about is student growth. Why is this important?
Well, I think too often when we think about student growth, we think about test scores or some other kind of data point. And even though that's important, I also think that the students need to see growth around their personal goals by looking at and thinking about the work that they've done throughout the year. And so although I don't mention this in the article, I also try to do a smaller scale reflection at the end of each quarter. And this kind of lets them track their progress and reflect on what they need to do for the next quarter. And I think that's important to show their growth from quarter to quarter in smaller increments, rather than just, okay, well, here's where I was at the beginning of the year and here's where I am at the end of the year. I want kids to be able to look at their school year and see how they've grown. You know, have them look at their attitudes towards reading and writing and their feelings about it and why those are important. Sometimes that growth is more important than an actual data point. And I also want them to be able to identify their areas of strength and the areas where they know that they still need to improve. Being a middle school teacher, I have students from 4 elementary schools, and they're all, which I mean, all students are at different levels, but they come in with different experiences. And being at the beginning of the year, sometimes we don't always know what those experiences are.
And I bet you're right, because it's so personal, they're going to remember it. I love that idea, like how you're having them reflect at the end of each quarter, because they're really learning how to do that for themselves, how to look back and think about what they're proud of and then what they are challenging themselves to do as they move forward.
Oh, absolutely. And usually those quarter goals or the quarter reflections are smaller. I try to get them to set some kind of a reading goal and some kind of a writing goal. And that reflection is really just on that. The one at the end of the year covers more things and it involves more pieces of reflection throughout the whole year.
Yeah, so the next piece of reflection is teacher growth. And Leanne, when I was reading your draft, I was thinking that it's such a tribute to who you are. Like you have student growth, which you're expecting, and then teacher growth and how you're expecting growth of yourself, that you really want to see that through the eyes of your students. I think you mentioned that this is kind of the hardest section on the survey, but yet it's clearly important to you.
You know, it really is on both of those accounts. You know, I want my students to feel safe. I want them to feel heard. I want them to feel respected. And I mean, let's face it. I know there's times when I just mess up. Maybe I reacted to a situation in the wrong way. You know, I know there's been times when I've gone home and I think, oh, wow, I should have done that a little differently. Or maybe I didn't see the situation the same way that they did. A lot of times, you know, we're kind of like parents in their eyes. Sometimes we don't really know anything at all. And I want to know about those times when they didn't feel heard or they didn't feel respected. But I don't like to focus on that negative part. So if you look at the end of the year survey I have, I try to tend to have them tell me about the positive things, the times when they were feeling like they were heard or the time that, you know, they did feel respected. And I know that if students don't tell me about those times, then that's something that I need to work on. Giving them an opportunity to tell me about these situations, I think helps me grow the most as a teacher, because if they don't feel that social and emotional connection with me in my classroom, then the learning is just not going to take place. I know that I can learn from my mistakes And if I don't know about those situations, then I can't fix them the following year. And that's the whole purpose of this section. And I also think that it's why it's the hardest, because it's the section that comes from the heart and not necessarily from the academic or from the ability standpoint. And sometimes when you're thinking from the heart, that's the hardest part.
It is true. And it's what makes us vulnerable, which in turn makes us solid teachers. We have to work on the heart in order to continue to meet kids where they are in our classrooms. I wonder too, Leanne, if in this section, sometimes things surprise you. Like I think we bring so much of our own personality to teaching that I bet there's things that you do that the kids value that you didn't even realize until you ask them and they give you some feedback about that.
You know, it's kind of funny that you say that, because early in my teaching career, I had mentioned something about writing, and I had one of them ask me, "Oh, you write?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." And I think sometimes, you know, being that, because you mentioned the vulnerability part, sometimes I think it's hard to let kids see us in a different light other than being a teacher. And so sometimes these reflections can also, it can help in that regard too.
So you open yourself up to, you know, hearing what kids are thinking just about you as a teacher and how you can grow. But then you also have another section on your survey that gives kids a chance to share their thoughts about the curriculum and about some of the things that are happening in your classroom. It's so clear. I was thinking when I read this part of the article, just the way that we can add choice and voice into our literacy instruction is sometimes as simple as asking kids, "Hey, what is it that you think about the classroom library? Or what is it that you think about independent reading time?" So will you tell us a little bit more about this section?
Okay. After I have given reflections, I oftentimes make changes in the following year. I think as teachers, we have to keep reflecting and changing. Our world is so different now than when I first started teaching. So I know that my teaching needs to change too. I know that I spend, especially in the summertime, a lot of time on my own craft by, you know, attending PDs, reading professional books, talking with other teachers, trying to do the work that I ask my students to do. And there's been times when I've learned something new in the summer and I've tried it in my classroom and it just flopped. And there's times when I've done something that I thought went well, and then I find out that the kids hated it. That always kind of surprises me when I think they're going to really enjoy something and it's like, oh my gosh, this was one of the worst things I could have done. And, you know, this reflection, it gives them an opportunity to say, "Hey, Mrs. Eck, this project we did, or, that lesson you taught, it was just awful. No one got anything from it. Or I don't think you should do this next year." So I think, you know, anytime that I can take what they've given me and make a change in the following year, I feel like that I have given them a voice. And even though they may not have benefited from the choice, the following year does. And I think that's just as important also.
And as you were just describing that, I was thinking about how it just allows you to keep a pulse on the age of the students and what their interests are and what their needs are. It just really helps you stay in tune to them.
Mm-hmm. And it really does. I think I ask myself sometimes, how can a teacher not do some kind of a reflection? It's like the information that I get is so valuable, and my next year's teaching so often is ingrained in that information that I get from them.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons I'm glad you wrote the article, because I think one of the reasons why is because, like you nailed it at the beginning, we're so busy during this time of the year. And yet listening to you talk, it makes it so clear how important and valuable that feedback is. So you give a, I think it's just such a gift to readers. And you share, you know, these sections and some sample questions, but then you also share the survey that you're using. And I would love for you just to talk a little bit more, Leanne, about is that process of the kids giving you feedback. How does that work in your room?
You know, I'll do several things with this feedback. My classroom library is really important to me. And there are a couple of questions on this year, which that question's on my surveys every year is what was your favorite book? You know, what books are missing from our library? And I do take that information and I try to make adjustments in my library. You know, if there's a book that everybody likes, then I may look to see what kind of shape it's in. You know, do I need to replace it? Do I need to buy additional copies? You know, if there's a gap, this year we probably have more English language learners than we've had before. And so I know that I need to get, you know, more books that kind of focus in on that aspect of my readers. If you notice on this survey, I don't have anything about virtual learning or hybrid learning. And that is because I have been face-to-face the entire year. And I know that if I would have been virtual or some kind of hybrid, I would have had questions like that. But luckily, I have been face-to-face and I don't have anything on there. But that is definitely something that if I were a remote teacher, I would definitely add those questions to the survey. You know, I kind of like to think that my reflection surveys are my starting point for planning the next year. I take those home. I look at them over the summer. I, you know, like I said, I sort them according to different things that I'm looking for. And I start making changes in the summer for my curriculum and my classroom for the following year.
So Leanne, I know you well enough to know if people are trying this out, I bet you'd love to hear from them. They could just tag you on Twitter. Is that one of your favorite social media places?
Sure, absolutely. It's Teach R4.
Yeah. Well, Leanne, thanks so much for spending some time talking with us and just cracking this open a little bit more. Really making us like just understand the value of it. And I hope that people are compelled to give this a whirl in their classrooms this year.
Well, thank you. I know, like I said, the end of the year, it's always buzzing, it's always busy, but I do hope people, you know, see the advantage of doing these surveys and kind of take advantage to what's on the website and maybe try it for the first time.
At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.